Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Peter Bollet. Peter is a career procurement professional with experience in the commercial airline industry and a no-nonsense approach to getting things done. Talking to Peter about his work in procurement provides plenty of reminders about why we all need to keep our heads up, even while our eyes are focused on the details. Add to that his penchant for colorful stories, and he is an ideal podcast guest. Hi, Peter, and thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
So I've shared more of a character background for anybody that hasn't met you, but professionally speaking, can you share a little bit more about your career journey?
For sure. I started out in working in a warehouse at the age of 16. So I pretty much 41 plus years now in supply chain procurement, customer service, marketing, sales, inside sales, planning, strategic procurement. The last 25 years were with Air Canada, where I retired last April 30th due to the COVID downturn in the complete devastation of the airline and travel industry. So, yeah, that's me pretty much in a nutshell.
Now, given the fact that you worked for Air Canada for so long, I'm curious, because I know there are a lot of road warriors, either professionally or personally, in this listening audience. What is something that you learned about the commercial airline business during your career that even the most frequent of flyers might not know?
Interestingly enough, you know, they say it takes a small village to raise a child. It's pretty much the same thing, only it's a rather large village to get an aircraft and a flight from origin to destination. They, you know, when you look behind the scenes, the numbers of people required for a successful takeoff, departure, routing, landing, disembarkment, the numbers are quite staggering. You know, from a passenger standpoint, you walk up to the gate, you get on the plane, you fly from point A to point B, you get to your hotel, you see your friends, and life is good. With a flight, it starts hours before the plane even takes off, in preparation work for the pilots, the in-flight crew, the catering, the ground equipment, the refueling, de-icing in the winter. It's quite the experience to understand from the inside looking out.
Pretty complex orchestration, it sounds like.
It's a finely tuned machine.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, speaking of finely tuned machines, one of the things that we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about today is how procurement professionals or sourcing professionals, right? Not everybody listening is in exactly the same role, but how you can handle difficult negotiations. We certainly face a lot of those. But I think to level set, Peter, how would you describe a difficult negotiation?
For me, typically, a difficult negotiation has the onset from two points. One, where the internal customer has completed a negotiation from a price perspective, a delivery perspective, with a supplier or a service provider, and then walks over to your desk and says, "Here, finish the contract work. We just need the T's and C's done."
That's the right? Worst.
We've all been through that fun. And really, there's a lot more in the negotiation that you need to have completed prior to the terms and conditions, the service levels, KPIs, warranty, length, price. There's other elements that the internal customers, for the most part, haven't considered. Some have, which is great, because then it does make that last stage a little bit easier and less challenging. But for the most part, they've not looked at those because they're razor focused on what's my need. Oh, I need a chiller for this building. I buy the chiller. Here, you finish the service agreement.
Now, when you think about that interplay, right, because I think that's what people forget. They say, okay, listen, we took care of the hard part. We've got the specs and the prices down. But I think people forget about the interplay, you know, when now all of that's in theory locked down, but you're completely throwing us to the wind on T's and C's. Do you think that there's a similar, I don't know if interplay is the word that we want to use, but a connection between the results in a negotiation and the role that technology and automation have started to play in procurement, right? Is this one of those areas where old-fashioned negotiations training where you read a case study and you practice or you have prep sheets or something like that would actually serve us better from a results standpoint than a lot of the flashy technology that we have access to today?
That's an interesting question, and it's one that's obviously bantered about quite often in the office environment as of late. One of the biggest pieces of technology that does help us move forward is cleaner data, the ability to recognize yeah. and clean data. The other side of it is the P2C, P2P, B2B, where RFPs now are run through an electronic system. They have their place when it comes to non-technical, common products, easy to source material. Complex negotiations really requires a well-rounded team. Each person plays a role within that team. You have the subject matter experts on the product, the need, the requirement. You have the negotiation team that will then transform all of the information needed into a good solid RFP or an RFI, go to market, analyze, and come back with a recommendation inclusive of the other team members' thoughts and considerations. So prior to entering into negotiation, the technology now, I feel, allows us to be a little bit smarter when it comes to the data points. It's a little bit more complex, and ease of use is not there yet, I find. In my personal experiences, that the software programs that are out there are really out of a box, 10-year-old drafting, and need heavy modification, which adds incremental cost to applying it within your company.
Well, I like your point about the roles, because, I had mentioned difficult negotiations. You brought up the idea of complex negotiations, not necessarily the same, but an awful lot of the time they overlap. And the more that's at stake, it's almost like you can only be so effective inside of maybe one perspective or one focus area, right? So you could potentially have somebody really focusing on the negotiating points around cost specifically, and have somebody else really focus on T's and C's, and then sort of bring all of those perspectives together, either in advance of the negotiation or if you're taking a break in the middle. Is there a point where you can have too many cooks in the kitchen? You know, if you're looking at a really difficult or complex or high stakes negotiation, where do you think you're going from having the right team beside you to maybe one too many people and things start to break down?
There is the fine line and balance that we all strive to get to. And really, I find that a good, strong, competent lead negotiator will key off of the different elements within that process. And there's many ups, there's many downs. There's some leveling out periods that come across, and identifying and having the ability to seek out the best solution and bring in or remove people from that process as needed is the key. The difficult ones really, they come from personality and negotiating styles. And styles are really key to how we move things forward and recognizing our strengths and our weaknesses within that negotiation process and how to draw in a strength when needed.
Yeah, I actually think that's incredibly important, because when you think about sort of the stereotypical negotiator, you're thinking like a Wolf of Wall Street type, like really tough, really aggressive. But especially given the last couple of years we've all been through, the relationships in the supply chain are sometimes the things that keep companies afloat. And so we can't be banging the shoe on the desk if tomorrow we're expecting to partner with this supplier. And, you know, given the number of negotiating styles and, of course, the equally diverse range of personality types, what have you learned over time about either your personality specifically and how that plays to different approaches in a negotiation versus maybe the mix of people that you would have want to have working with you based on having different personality types and negotiating styles?
For myself, personally, I've been coined as strong yet fair. Some coin it as aggressive and fair. I guess I can be described best as a type A personality. I'm pretty confident, and that comes from spending time, taking time, understanding the negotiation I'm going into, understanding what our levers are, what our strengths are, what value proposition we bring to the supplier, and try to understand where that supplier is trying to position itself within our company at the same time. And that comes from having worked at Air Canada. Air Canada is a big brand name around the world, and there are big positives that come with saying that I'm a supplier to Air Canada. So understanding how you can leverage that within a negotiation and what benefits you can draw from that are key. For example, we can place your product in front of 160,000 people a day. So it's 160,000 touch points that your product has per day. That type of marketing value proposition is priceless when you're huge. A smaller to mid-sized company. So yeah, I you know, and when it comes to recognizing, we had a great senior director 20 years ago. We were very early on in the stage of strategic procurement at Air Canada. She brought in a company to teach us about negotiating styles, how to counter different styles, how to approach and thoroughly understand what yours is and what are the advantages of that style and what are the disadvantages of that style. So throughout the negotiation, you have to be very aware and cognizant of what you're doing, how you're doing it, how you're acting, mannerisms, your speech, how you're speaking. Are you too excitable? Are you too calm? Are you too blasé? When do you use pitch and voice to emphasize on a point? When do you use threats? When not to use threats? How do you have the ability to use a threat? A threat is a very effective tool, but you better have a solid backup plan if you're thinking to pull that out of your back pocket.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds like preparing to negotiate is sort of like a process of self-discovery. You know, you have to understand yourself, understand how different circumstances and conditions in the room affect you, especially today, given so many negotiations can't happen across the table, even if we want them to. Now we're forced to go to, you know, web meetings or phone calls. You do lose some of those signals if you're in a situation where you can't see the other person. Once you've prepared to negotiate and you're getting ready for a specific sit down, if you go into a negotiation knowing that it's either going to be complex or it's going to be difficult, are there additional steps that you recommend taking just to make sure that you're really buttoned up and prepared to get what is needed out of that negotiation?
Definitely. You know, you can't repeat it enough. It's research, research, research. Understand and research what you're heading into. One of the key tools that I love to use in a negotiation, and I used it regularly, was qualitative and quantitative analysis prior to communicating with the suppliers that have responded back to an RFP. Really dive into their proposals, their responses, and understand each of the elements and how they match up with the competitors' elements. Put it on paper and then put it in front of them prior to entering into the discussion so they understand. And part of that is also the conditioning. You know, there's positioning and conditioning for negotiation. You want to achieve a certain outcome, but you also need to understand what could my possible best outcome be? What is my worst outcome? And part of that conditioning and document, qualitative and quantitative analysis, we'll let the supplier be prepared for the discussion, which takes some of the difficulty out of having that communication with them because it's not being dropped on them last second. So they can be prepared as well.
Absolutely. Now, Peter, we've really focused on, you know, difficult things and challenges and personal discovery and uphill battles and things. But as we start to wrap, I want to pivot and actually ask you about something different. And for regular listeners, you will know where we are in the conversation. This is one of the most interesting questions I ever get to ask in interviews because I don't think I've ever gotten a duplicate answer ever. But this is the Sourcing Hero podcast. And, you know, when we think about heroes in the context of public servants, people like doctors and nurses and teachers and policemen and firefighters come to mind. But I do also believe that heroism exists in a business context. And so as we start to wrap, I want to ask you for your opinion. What does the idea of a sourcing hero or the notion of heroism in a business context mean to you?
I love this question. I look forward to it every time you put out a new podcast. I wait to the end just to get that guest perspective on
it's a tricky
what their
one,
thoughts
right?
are.
You can talk about negotiation or supply chain risk or collaboration all day long, but something like this is sort of like the Rorschach test of podcasts.
100% agree. You know, for me, a sourcing hero, they're really a champion of their team, their company. It's somebody that's not afraid of taking risk, not afraid of challenging the norm. You know, for the old adage, think outside the box. You know, so many people say think outside the box. I don't fully believe that many understand what thinking outside the box is. You need to shred a box in order to be a hero and a mm-hmm. champion, and really leverage the strengths of your teammates. I can count countless times that I come up against a situation and I turn to my colleague next to me and I'll pitch an idea. I'll talk to them. We'll debate it for about 45 minutes. And sometimes it gets pretty exciting. But it's somebody that's driving the benefit for all parties throughout a process. And that's just not for his own company or their own company. It's for the supplier as well. Mutual gains bring forth a fantastic outcome always. If both parties are winning to a certain degree, you will always have a strong victory. And that to me is a true champion, true sourcing hero, one that knows their strengths, their weaknesses, and addresses them along the way.
I love this idea of shredding the box, right? We've all been given the advice to think outside the box, but if you manage to get yourself out of it, but leave it behind you, somebody else may get stuck in it. If you shred the box, right, then everyone is more free, more open-minded, has more options than they did before. I think not only is that a great way of looking at it, it's a terrific visual when we think about taking advice and trying to make it actionable. See, Peter, I knew you wouldn't let me down. That's an awesome answer.
You know, fear is our biggest enemy, right?
Indeed. No, it definitely is. So now that we've had this great conversation, for people listening in that would like to connect with you, I definitely encourage people to connect with Peter on social media. He is both engaged and engaging. What is the best way for folks to get in touch?
The ideal way is through LinkedIn. It's on my cell phone. Somebody reaches out to make a connection. You know, I'd love to get a note as to why you want to connect. Helps level set the future interactions that we have. But I'm open to connecting on LinkedIn. I'm there often and I enjoy the platform. I've learned some great things through the different learning avenues there, the channels. I've met some fantastic people, Kelly, yourself, you know, many others included. And it's an outstanding learning opportunity. The minute we shut ourselves down to learning is the minute we've stopped moving forward.
That is so true. Peter, thank you so much for sharing your time and your perspective and your energy with us today.
Truly a pleasure, Kelly. Truly a pleasure. Have yourself a fantastic rest of the day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.